Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Wednesday, February 10th, 2021. The time is 9:03. We're meeting in the State Capitol Room number 205. In attendance is Vice Chair Senator Stevens, Senator Machicki, Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Holland, Chair. Thank you to Jeannie, our recording secretary, and Kelsey, our moderator today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. Today, we will continue the conversation regarding the funding and learning impacts of COVID-19 on K-12 education in Alaska. We are joined by hopefully five superintendents representing school districts around the state. While we don't have time to hear from all 54 districts, I'm hopeful that these conversations today and Friday will provide an appreciation for the vast differences and unique challenges we face. Today, this hearing will be held as a panel discussion in which we can gain perspective directly from those with boots on the ground. We've invited five superintendents to speak about their experiences in navigating the pandemic. First, focusing on the impact that this pandemic has had on student learning. Superintendents, could you please provide us with your insights into how students have fared positively and negatively with the transition to virtual learning? Or even if any schools manage to avoid physical shutdowns and transition to virtual learning. And we will start with Superintendent Dina Bishop, Anchorage School District, and I believe maybe about 48,000 students in that district.
Thank you. Through the chair, I did want to share that we are now about 43,000 students in ASD. And we did have see a significant out-migration to homeschool, statewide homeschool, as well as really leaving the state in particular with our students. I would say that there were some silver linings, actually, in learning during the pandemic. Certainly one of the biggest ones that I'd like to share is the growth in teachers' competencies with technology, utilizing machine thinking for assessments, really building muscle around platforms that share online and blended learning, and really an increase in the creativity and engagement needed in classrooms today with kids actually growing up online. You know, they are social beings and social media. We know that it's not all good, that learning is good, and we want to teach our kids the skills in social media and really technology learning in a positive way, to use that for good, not evil, if you will. So those were some of the positives. What we did find is that certain student groups really thrived during this time, and those generally were in families that really had the capacity to be able to be home with children. Significantly, this was impacting at the pre-K through two level, when many of our parents leave to go to work, older siblings were home with children doing the learning. And that was difficult. And we are seeing a lag in certain student groups due to this, and just the ability to be, when we say homeschool, children don't do this on their own. They really, their parents engage, their grandmas and grandpas engage, and families in Anchorage that did not have that ability, they really did suffer more than others. And so that was a significant learning. In addition, we found very clearly that there are many families in Anchorage that, while bandwidth and is available, while fast speed internet is available, it is unaffordable, or many of our families, to tell the truth, had poor standing with a lot of our companies. And so one of the uses of our CARES Act by our board was to really do a $1.5 million budget line that we took care of the internet, if you will, and some of our children's families. So we were the middleman in paying it, because they just couldn't even get the service. So I just wanted to share some of those things that it was. We always want to see the silver lining. I'm a person that sees the cup always half full. But we really had to work out a lot of the individual one-offs that once we hit this pandemic, what we learned about access, poverty, working parents, second languages, all that impact the outcomes for children. And if public education is to be successful, it is to give kids that opportunity to succeed, all of them.
Thanks so much. And just a reminder, we'll try to keep the responses to about 2 minutes. You did pretty good because we have a lot of people online today. Superintendent Kerry Boyd, UConn Koyukuk School District, and I have about 1,800 students that I see in there. Can you hear me? Superintendent Kerry Boyd?
Oh, yes, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, I was on mute. We have about 4,400 students. This past year, we've had exponential growth in our homeschooling programs. Typically, we have about 1,700 students in our homeschool program, and we soared up to over 4,100 with our special ed population going up about 175% in our homeschool program, which has created some of its own challenges as far as providing a strong quality homeschool program to our students, trying to find special education staff during this year has probably been one of our biggest challenges that we've had, making sure that we have good, strong instructional programs and supports for many of the families that may or may not have homeschooled before. For our, you know, some of the positives that we have found for this year, if we want to start with the positives, what I have seen across the state, across the nation, in our district, is such an a great respect now for teachers, students as well. We've seen a decrease in student discipline in that I think that they really, you know, when the schools closed back in March or went to remote learning, it really changed the perspective. Students want to be in school, and that's been really nice for our teachers, for our staff, for our parents. Some of the challenges that we do have in our remote areas, I would say, we have 9 remote schools with approximately 300 students. We open up all of our schools right after Labor Day, and we've been open for the most part throughout the year. However, when we have had to close schools, we have had paper packets. We do not have the infrastructure in place for students to receive distance learning. And I can expand on that in some of the other questions that we have. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I see Superintendent Bobby Boland, Bering Strait School District, and I showed 1,700 students. And maybe you can update us on that.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning. Sorry, I was late getting in. I couldn't get into the Teams. But, yeah, just over 1,700 students. That's our pretty much we stay pretty consistent year after year. Of course, we, you know, our challenges have been, as others have already stated, kind of the infrastructure of broadband and internet and being able to reach our students when they're not, you know, when they're not in face-to-face instruction. We've actually been very lucky here in BSSD this year. I've only had to close 2 schools for any length of time in 2 communities, but the other right now we're still currently everybody is open except for one in a kind of a modified setting right now due to a couple of cases. You know, our biggest challenge is the is working with each individual village. There's a lot of apprehension to the virus and to what is causing those challenges. So, you know, they're very protective, trying to keep it out as everybody is. But so they tend to go to the extreme with just one case. So that's kind of been our major. But we haven't, you know, we're the only thing in town when you get into a village. So it hasn't really hurt our attendance because they don't have any other options, and they don't have the option of really homeschooling unless we send out just packets, which we know are not successful. So I'll leave it at that, and I can answer any other questions. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Superintendent John O'Brien, Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and I showed 9,000 students.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Holland. Yes, it's been quite a journey for, I think, us and all districts here in Alaska and nationwide through this COVID pandemic. We have been able to keep most of our schools open for the majority of this school year. We started off with the Central Peninsula, which is the Soldotna, Kenai, Sterling area, early in the year, having to start in remote due to a spike early this summer, and then went back to remote right around Thanksgiving through most of the entire second quarter. But first quarter, we were mostly in person for all students in every area of the district. We're quite a large district geographically, so we've been handling things on a geographic level. Since January, since the second semester, the start of the new year, I'm happy to say that we have been in-person learning. We started out with pre-K through sixth grade students, and then on January 11th, we were able to go back to 100% in-person learning for all of our students and families who chose the in-person learning option. And what we're finding is now that we're back to in-person learning, more and more families are returning their children to our schools, which is what we were hoping would happen as this pandemic has progressed and we've learned so much more about the actual virus. Instructionally, I'll echo what Dr. Bishop states. We do have some families who have thrived with a remote online learning environment, but that certainly is not the case for most families, especially those that did not choose that option and maybe weren't equipped with having a parent at home. And I think what we have found, even within families, if you have three or four children or even two children, some parents are sharing experiences with us that one child is absolutely thriving. They love the remote environment. And, their other child is not doing well, is feeling socially isolated, maybe is depressed. So we've been focusing a lot on not just the instructional, but also the social and emotional well-being of students. Our staff have really been making a concerted effort to reach out to families, to see how they're doing. Now that we have most of our students back in person learning, that's a lot easier to do than it was before. But it's been a journey. Even trying to get most of the community on board with some of our mitigations in order to keep students in school. Masking for athletics. We try to put a positive spin on things, and our focus is to keep kids in school full time for the rest of this school year. So we're maintaining our important mitigations. That's ruffled some feathers in the community among some folks, but I think by and large, people are happy that their students are back in school and want to keep them in school. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent O'Brien. And Superintendent Jason Johnson, Dillingham School District, and I see maybe 500 students in Dillingham.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have about, typically on a normal year, we've had about 450. This year we experienced a significant decrease in student enrollment, which was really to be expected. Living in a region where in 1919, the majority of the population perished as a result of the Spanish flu, it's something that's still very prevalent in our community. That historic knowledge has not went away, so it's natural that the majority of our community still feel that passion. So we really want to honor that, and we've tried to make extraordinary efforts to respect those feelings throughout this process. We've been really fortunate in that we've been on site for about 70% of the instructional year so far, which has really been a blessing. And as others have noted, some of the real positives that have came out of this for us was a chance to really build our relationships in the community and with a lot of our partners. We do extensive outreach with our tribal council, our city government, and our health corporation, and that's enabled us to do a lot of things and provide a litany of supports that I think otherwise would not have been possible. What we've also seen is just a huge amount of innovation on behalf of our instructional team. I think teachers have been put in a situation where they're forced to learn new strategies that we can use in the future, which I think is a blessing in disguise, actually, and will help our parents prepare for the next next path of our students' lives. On the negative piece, something that I don't want to lose sight of, I think the biggest negative impact is the social-emotional impact that this has caused for our students. There's simply no way to replace the bond that exists between a teacher and a student. It can't be done in video. I don't believe it's successful through virtual school. And we're seeing that in our community. And I think what we're also noticing is kind of the ACEs, the adverse childhood experiences that many of our students are having right now as a result of time away from our school. Typically, we're our biggest students' advocates. So that is an area I don't want to lose sight of throughout this hearing today.
Thank you, Superintendent Johnson. Any questions from the committee? I can just keep on going down my list. So two of you mentioned, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple questions I was taken by comments made by Superintendent Bishop, and I just wanted to see if I understood what you were saying, Dina. What was the impact that you noted then on, it sounds like lower income and single parent households. Would you say that there was a significant gap? That you seem to describe both the incidence of not having access to internet and the issue of whether there was a parent who could be at home to deal with these issues. So could you maybe expand a little bit on that?
Through the chair to Senator Begich. Absolutely. We have, we're a very diverse district. For those that don't know, 62% of our student body are children of color and 38% are white, just to give a picture that we are high diversity, very multicultural community. And so there are just different experiences in our homes. And I do want to share that the two student groups that were affected the most, with almost doubling their DNF failure rates, were Alaska Native students as well as Pacific Islanders. In addition, our economically disadvantaged students also doubled the rate of the DNF, as well as just the student learning data that we take in elementary school. So while overall the percent of increase in negative outcomes such as failing grades, dropping out, struggling with different aspects was about, growth maybe 6 to 10%. In some of our student groups, it was nearly one third of all students. It's 30% of the children in that student group. And so the experiences were quite different. And as you mentioned, when we looked into this, they were very, very different. Many older siblings had to watch the younger ones. So it impacted their learning on while they're at home as well as their siblings. Learning had to occur at night with parents because they were working during the day. They were essential workers, as well as a very, very large gap in accessibility of internet. And it not because we don't have the bandwidth and the infrastructure, but because of the affordability and the ability, strict ability, just to get it in the home.
Just a quick follow-up on that last point.
Follow-up from Senator Begich.
Thank you. Superintendent Bishop, I have friends who are bus drivers in Austin, Texas School District in Travis County, and they actually were, because they had to be paid under contract, they were required to set up remote internet stations from their buses as a way of giving access to low-income and those with less access. Had you considered that for the school district? Did you do anything like that, or is that something you might consider doing should this continue?
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair to Senator Begich. That's a wonderful idea, and we've explored many, and we actually have MiFi and Wi-Fi access. What would occur is that the use of that, because of the family not having internet and then having it, what would ordinarily through the Wi-Fi or MiFi be available that would carry a child through a month or through a week was utilized in 2 days, simply because I believe in a family not having the speeds at which is needed for the educational infrastructure. They would utilize that, and other people in the family would utilize it, so it pooled on the system. Hence, we had to have a solution, and we learned last spring about what had happened, that once we released the Wi-Fi, families, not just children, but whole families were in such need of that, that it was gobbled up pretty much. So that's why we had to go to a steady, a hard line, if you will, with having a modem in the household that was actually more economical and more feasible and more steady for families, so they weren't using it and leaving it. When those buses for Wi-Fi go around, they would be parked a certain time and then leave. Sometimes they weren't the times that kids needed to work on the work because their families weren't home. And so we just needed a more sturdy structure to build equity around students so that the family's situation of poverty, if you will, did not affect the student learning.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And a question from Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd actually give this to Superintendent O'Brien, if he's still there. Superintendent O'Brien, we keep hearing about ghost students, students who just disappear, they drop out. Could you provide us any statistics, any numbers if that's the case in your district? Beyond that, do you have plans to help those kids in the future, like through summer schools and those programs? I'd like to know what you're planning there.
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Stevens. Yes, over the last couple of years, since the pandemic's inception, you know, there have been such situations, especially when we were in 100% remote, where students have disappeared, so to speak, despite multiple daily, weekly attempts on the part of staff to reach out to the families. Some of them are just extremely hard to reach. They don't have internet connectivity. You know, families that are typically in transition and transient a lot, it's a struggle at times to make sure that we have updated contact information for those students. So there have been some of those cases. What we have found, though, now that we're back 100% in-person learning, is that those students have returned for the most part. So I think that the big issue with ghost students really was when we were in 100% remote for the entire fourth quarter of last year, when the governor, you know, through the emergency declaration, closed all schools. And then we experienced a similar situation when we had to go 100% remote for second semester. In terms of what plans KPBSD has for bridging the gap for students that have maybe missed out on some instructional opportunities, yes, we do plan on doing a robust summer school program here. We also plan on leveraging some of the CARES funding for additional interventionists during the school day to help out, particularly with literacy instruction and math instruction, where students have experienced gaps. And then after school programs, we plan on bolstering our after school programs. And the key for many of our students, because we do have many families in poverty or both parents working or single parents that can't transport their students after school or during the summer, we will be incorporating transportation as a part of additional summer school and after school opportunities for remediation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent O'Brien. A question from Senator Machicki.
Yeah, this is for Superintendent O'Brien. I know where three of those kids are if you happen to be looking for them. Question.
Yeah, one, they're right across the street from me, yeah.
Right. No, they're here with me, but they're still enrolled and working remotely. So question for you, have you considered an exit poll with the kids sort of asking what worked and what didn't work on the remote piece? And the reason I ask that question is one of mine, and I've talked about this in this committee, actually thrived in that environment, really kind of blossomed, Lucy, the middle of the younger ones. And the reason I ask that question is when you talk about catching up and possibly some summer options, just wondering if you might consider using what you learned on some of the distance delivery for delivering at a lower cost to a much larger group of kids that may or may not be able to make it to the building but could take advantage of what we've learned. So the combination of sort of what worked for them and what didn't, it'd be nice to understand that from a student's perspective and maybe a parent's perspective, coupled with expanding distance options for kids that might need a little bit of extra help.
And Superintendent O'Brien, we'll get you to answer this question, then I'll probably just go back up the roll to the other superintendents with the same question about, is there plans for an exit poll and what worked and what didn't work?
Thank you. Yes, through the chair to Senator Nachicki. Absolutely. Earlier this year and throughout the year, we've actually been reaching out to students. Our assistant superintendent of instruction, Mr. Clayton Holland, has worked really hard to make sure that student voice is a part of the process that we're using to learn and to improve. And as a matter of fact, we do plan on doing an exit poll of at least our secondary students, grades six and higher, and parents before the closeout of the school year. Dr. Bishop talked about a silver lining in focusing on the positives, and I think there are some aspects of what we've done instructionally, and KPBSD was already well on its way to hybrid online, you know, rigorous online instruction prior to the pandemic. But what this has really done is provided every teacher in the district with an opportunity to learn how to teach with a digital parallel in a hybrid format. So even though we hopefully in the fall of 21 will not be dealing with this pandemic to the level that we are now, there are many aspects of instruction that will never go back to the way they were. We plan on continuing to have remote opportunities for families at all levels if that has worked for them. So we'll be leveraging, you know, Canvas and the professional development that we've provided to our teachers to do that. We may even have at the elementary and middle level, like we have at the high school level for some time now, remote only teachers that work with those families that they still want to be connected to the district and to a neighborhood school, but they want to do it through a remote option. And then I think what you were alluding to for summer programming with an online option, yes, we plan on leveraging opportunities for students that may not be able to or want to come in for not only for remediation, but we plan on doing acceleration and lots of elective offerings over the summer for our high school and middle school students who maybe have missed out on some of those opportunities throughout the year. So thank you.
So thank you, Superintendent O'Brien, Superintendent Johnson. So question would be plans. Do you have plans for an exit poll and what worked and didn't work? And you can jump off from that.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As far as an exit poll, we typically would not do something like that, and that might sound odd, but the beauty of such a small district is we have daily, if not bi-hourly, communication with most of our parents. The extensive outreach we do enables us to make immediate changes to our planning. We've made 12 to 13 different steps as far as our Smart Start plan. We've made that many modifications. And what we're able to see in a small community, if a teacher's Zoom video doesn't load, one of our meal service deliveries is 2 or 3 minutes late, we know that immediately. We don't need to wait until the end of the year. And I think that's just the beautiful thing about a small community. And we also really work closely with our student government and allow them to voice their concerns to us. We have a representative on the school board who communicates with me routinely about what's working for their student body and what's not. And we've just found so much power in giving our students voice throughout the planning of this, and things like looking at how can graduation be unique and a great experience for our seniors in this environment. So while we're not doing an exit poll per se, I think we're doing daily polls here in Dillingham.
Thank you so much. Superintendent Bolin.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, Senator Maticki. We also don't necessarily have an exit poll kind of planned. Kind of as was just stated, we use our AECs, our advisory education committees, on a regular basis, a lot more this year than we have in the past, trying to get input from, you know, what's working and what's not in each of our 15 unique communities. You know, again, we know that our distance delivery is basically packets. It's basically, you know, pen, pencil, and paper. We already know that doesn't work. We already know that's not the best way to engage kids. You know, we've tried to incorporate other offline technologies and platforms that students can use. But that's, you know, so we know that that's not working, and we're trying to use our education committees and our, as also stated, our youth leaders, which is part of our student government, to represent their schools and to let us know, you know, what we can do to make things better for them in this current conditions. And most of that's been centered around trying to do hands-on projects, trying to increase those in the communities to better do that. So we don't necessarily either have a current plan for any type of exit poll, but again, we're trying to also get at least, you know, weekly or biweekly pulses from our communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Bolin. Superintendent Kerry Boyd, UConn Koyukuk.
Through the chair, Senator McKitchie, UConn Koyukuk School District does have an exit plan that we have in place right now, and we're utilizing. We also have what we call our satisfaction polls, so that we can continuously find out what we can do to improve our services. Right now we just put out another poll last week. We have about 500 responses so far, so I try to get about 75% feedback. Our goal is to provide our families and support as much as we can, and we send out a confidential poll. And so we have two different ones going on simultaneously right now, so we can kind of get a better idea of when our students are leaving, where are they going, and it itemizes, are they going to a brick and mortar, are they going to a private school, are they going out of state? And then the other poll is, what can we do to improve our services, what do you need, and ask them for their comments. And it's very enlightening, some of the information that we have ongoing.
Thank you so much. And finally, Superintendent Bishop with Anchorage School District.
Thank you. Through the chair, to Senator Maticki. I do want to share that of our 4,000 less students this year than last, we have had a system to look at where they are. We have to share 914 students. I know Senator Stevens had an earlier question about that. 230 of them actually were confirmed dropouts. 149, they do not have a plan. 81 received a GED. We have 684 students that are out there that we cannot and have not been able to contact for very similar reasons as Superintendent O'Brien. Just no forwarding address, no forwarding phone number, no connectivity or email address. So we continue to do outreach through our local partners. But the other students we do know did go to different places. Our programs this year were designed around the feedback that we received last year. One of the major things from parents who immediately had to go online was that when teachers choose their platform, if you will, to upload their work and the students' learning and, you know, basically the system that holds it all. They were very not happy, very disgusted that individual teachers could choose their different platforms. If you're an elementary teacher, you had one, or because we had just allowed the innovators to innovate. So we worked with our unions to be able to select one, which is Canvas. And now we have set lessons that are can be utilized across the state. DEED also is in partnership with Anchorage just to make these public to anyone. And they're everything from, you know, videos that are placed on there for learning how to blend sounds and things like that for every single unit. So there's just hundreds of thousands of them out there. But selecting that was number one. Number two was that keeping the same school day and expecting kids to get up at the same time just was not very smart for us. We were able to move back our school start time for high school by 30 minutes. So the first lesson on Zoom is at 8 rather than our earlier. Those two items came from our parent feedback after the spring semester. The next one we did in a feedback mode was after summer school, because we had great success last year of redirecting funds that we had saved from the spring to students to ensure that they matriculated as well as graduated. Another piece of information that came from students was that they needed the ability for their teachers to text them. Things were a little bit looser in the summer school and they had direct talking. Generally, texting a student could get into a dangerous area, so it is discouraged a lot by school district policy. But we needed to come up with how do kids like to be talked to? It's not through emails. And so we worked with a system that is safe and can be searched, and so that we have those records of teachers talking to their kids through their mode of communication, which is through a smartphone. And those students let us know that, that was needed. And now teachers don't have to feel like they have the freedom to text and use individual devices. But all of those records are safe and secure and can be accessed later on. We are planning a summer school this year based on parent feedback and the need for both face-to-face as well as asynchronous ability to enroll in classes. So yes to the question, do we have feedback? And yes, our new programs are basically designed around what we learn. As you know, Anchorage is the last of I think school districts to get kids back online due to our capacity of being a larger city with lots of the medical services here. We're happy to do so, but we continue to learn from our families what worked and what they found didn't, because again, when we send kids home, our parents are our number one partners, and they are willing to share with us. So thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Bishop. I believe a question from Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to ask this of Dr. Bishop, but you might want to ask it to the others as well. Just because Anchorage is the largest school district, I'm kind of curious. I think it's roughly $180 million in COVID funds was distributed to school districts across the state. So I would like to know how much your district received and how you spent it. And then paired the flip side of that coin, what cost savings did you take in your district, and how much did you save? For instance, did you turn down the heat in the school buildings when they were closed? Did you turn off the lights? Did you renegotiate bus contracts, snow plowing contracts, et cetera? So both how much COVID money did you receive and how did you spend it? And then please talk to us about cost savings and how much you saved and how you saved it.
And that kind of works for the format. We're going to switch over to talking about funding issues and funding questions. So we will start with Superintendent Bishop on this one.
Well, we haven't got the 50 million yet.
Thank you. Those are great questions, and I appreciate it through the chair to Senator Hughes. I do want to say that in the initial CARES Act, this was distributed last spring, Anchorage School District received approximately $12 million. And what we expended was board approved, and we spent $3.5 million on health teachers, information technology to set up the new year, needing devices and connectivity, $4.7 million, $1.5 million for course development, summer school, $700,000, PPE, 300 thousand. We put our own savings, just so you know, in the PPE to actual setup. We also utilized, in conjunction with this $12 million, almost $9 million from our fund balance to add to those PPE. Equitable outcomes, working with summer schools, $200,000. Charter schools, we provided them additional funds of $600,000. Nearly, and then our non-public schools, we provided our private schools in Anchorage, we provided $400,000 to them, and that was specifically on the prior money in the initial CARES Act, or ESSER-1. ESSER-2, which is appropriated, we haven't, of course, received it, it's going to move into next year. We have built 80% of these funds into our budget for next year, as well as summer school this year, to really basically double down on what we need to do for kids. There is quite a learning gap, and the kids that have experienced the disproportionality of outcomes, as well as the other really suffering that really has occurred in the social emotional and just needing to put inputs into students. As you know, from depression to suicides, it's more than just academics. We're implementing those funds not only into starting the school year well, but also having quite a robust summer school to work on not only credit recovery, but skill building. We were delighted last year to have some savings, and immediately we implemented a hiring delay. Once we knew that we were shutting down, we wanted to know what positions were hired and was that an efficient use, an effective use of that position. And so we had a two-tier, look into every personnel hiring that we had, from aides to teachers to executives. And so we had to have an agreement of the need of the position, knowing that student enrollment was being impacted, knowing that ADM is the function that provides your school revenue, or your district revenue, rather. We made great savings in substitute utilization when we weren't in buildings for even just appointments, things like that. Lots of doctors, all kinds of things shut down last spring, if you recall. So we made an immense savings on substitutes. Now that we're back in school, we're finding with the quarantine and things like that, that account is being utilized this year. Also, the district did renegotiate the transportation contract for a slightly reduced cost due to the reduced use of utilization. One of the things you mentioned was in the utility costs, and this troubled us in the fall because we knew that, although I'm not sure if everybody knows, although we didn't have full students in, we have had 53 schools were operating with programs inside the school. We partnered with Boys and Girls Club, as well as our own school district programs, where we had students in and teachers teaching, even though it wasn't ubiquitous across the district. But we did had trouble finding where were the cost savings. What we did do, though, is we increased by 4 times the air exchange in our HVACs. And so while saving on electricity might have been one thing, the exchange of really utilizing more electricity with the ventilation and shoring that all up for students coming back was primarily the difference. So the air exchange units are now turned on 4 times as much. It used to be hourly, and now it's 4 times an hour. And so some of the mitigation, if you will, in just that energy was part of that non-savings. But that was tricky for us. We really had to dig deep into understand why that didn't occur, because that was a huge expectation of ours. But again, I do want to say we had quite a big success in last year's summer school. And this year we have really a planning committee with project management to design this year's summer school to make sure it meets the needs of our families and students. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Bishop. Superintendent Boyd with UConn Koyukuk. Same question. It's basically, did your district benefit from any CARES Act funding, and did you were you able to identify any cost savings?
Thank you, through the chair, to Senator Hughes. Yes, we did benefit from some CARES Act funding. We received 190, nothing in comparison to Anchorage School District. We received $196,000 in ESSER funds, in the, I call it the GRF, $148,000, And then we just received our ESER 2 funding. Well, we haven't received it yet, approximately $737,000 that we will be allocating at our next board meeting for next year. We've spent a large majority of it on planning, on professional development, internet access for our schools, for PPE gear, for our students to help them with some of their resources that they need. We still have a committed $150,000 been spent. We have $35,000 left for this year that will be looked at for ongoing sanitation when we do close schools, which it's been some schools we haven't had to close at all. And as far as any cost savings, the biggest cost savings that we've had this year is that we have not had any travel this year. That has been stopped because of the pandemic. Anytime a student, if they are to travel, whether it's for school-related or for personal, they would have to come back to the community and quarantine for 2 weeks. So we have stopped all that travel in an effort to increase our instructional time in the school. But as far as cost savings, probably the biggest savings was travel, some on substitute and support staff due to ongoing quarantining in the communities. When there is quarantining, it usually, because it's a small community, impacts many families, which impacts the school.
Thank you, Superintendent Boyd. Superintendent Bolin with Bering Strait District.
Yes, thank you, through the chair, Senator Hughes. So we received approximately $550,000 for, in ESER funds. And we were, we spent most of that on trying to increase student possibilities for learning. So we purchased Chromebooks, tried to go to one-on-one so that students didn't have to use common computers. We also bought additional computers for teachers to use for any type of instruction that they could do digitally when it was possible. Obviously, PPE equipment, hand sanitizers, plastic dividers. We also invested in a machine to make our own sanitation and cleaning solutions so that we didn't, the cost of shipping hazardous materials to the bush is just so high that it made more sense to kind of buy the chemicals and be able to create it here than it did to keep purchasing from the lower 48. So we did have that. We did have cost savings with travel. Obviously, travel was shut down. The travel restrictions, as Superintendent Boyd said, was quarantine required for 2 weeks, which is still ongoing. So we still are saving a little bit of money in that, although we have started to finally be able to open up and get some maintenance and out to our schools and to get some itinerant instructors out to our schools and work with students and teachers face-to-face. We've spent about $423,000 of our $500,000-plus on teaching supplies and equipment. And then we also about another $300,000 we've spent on maintenance supplies and equipment, and then approximately about $65,000 in trying to figure out alternative ways to provide meals on a daily basis to students, even if they weren't in school. So, so that if you add those up, those numbers are more than what we were reimbursed. So, so we have shifted money around, but I think we've also incurred costs because of trying to do professional development and training for our teachers, not only from a distance, but from, get them together where we can and so they can still have an impact on our students. So, we're trying to do things with this money that will be long lasting for the district. And that's the plan for the upcoming new funds is to make long terms in our HVAC and systems like that because our schools are older and that's important for their safety moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Bolin. Now, Superintendent Johnson with Dillingham School District.
through the chair, Senator Hughes, we initially received about $138,000 from the first ESSER funding and GER funding, and we predominantly used that for connectivity, acquiring the devices that we figured we would need for this instructional year, as well as helping our home-based students as well as staff ensure that they had internet in their homes so that this digital system could operate and keep continuity in our education program no matter what we faced for the current year. We do expect to get around $430,000 in this second round of funding, and we're really going to leverage that money to build a robust summer school. We're really putting a lot of weight on that, and not just from remedial school, but enrichment opportunities for students that may have lost some of that progress in advanced placement courses and things of that nature. So really a two-pronged approach to that funding. And we're also looking at a really large literacy push as a result of that funding. We feel like with a predominant student population that identifies as Indigenous or Alaskan Native, that our push for literacy needs to be extremely strong. Some of those programs can't be delivered with the same efficacy when students are off-site. We've been very blessed to partner with our local tribal council and the Alaska Community Foundation, and we've actually spent around $1 to $1.2 million in additional technology, ensuring that every one of our students has home-based internet in their homes that we pay for. Equity is a very large issue in rural Alaska. So through those partnerships, we've been able to ensure that that's in place for the whole school year. So we don't believe we've really incurred any savings as a result of COVID. Through these other grants and partnerships, we've expended an exceptional amount of money that's enabled us to still have these relationships and what we believe to still deliver is an impactful education.
Thank you, Superintendent Johnson. And finally, Superintendent O'Brien with the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. And again, it's about CARES Act funding and any cost savings.
Thank you through the chair to Senator Hughes. I'll address the cost savings and or in some cases cost increases that we experienced as a result of COVID. And I'll start with some of the increases were in the areas of needing a lot more professional development for our teachers, particularly making the shift when we needed to go to remote learning on a moment's notice last quarter. So we spent an awful lot of time and resources with our professional development team in professional development and buying additional software and programs that our teachers would need in that area. So in that respect, it really was a significant cost increase for us. As far as cost savings, this year haven't been a whole lot of cost savings other than travel that you've heard my fellow superintendents talk about. We have not allowed any out-of-state travel or in-state travel for our staff as it pertains to professional development. So we've been approving only online remote career development and professional development opportunities and have been providing our own in-house professional development in a remote environment as well, rather than in person. When we look at last year, that fourth quarter, any experiences where we were able to experience savings, we did renegotiate our bus contract with Apple Bus for reduced utilization of some of those buses. However, we rolled out a huge program through the School Nutrition Services Department where we were continuing to feed students throughout the district and had several drop-off points throughout the district that we utilized some of our bus routes for food delivery. We also used those buses for delivery of computers, laptops, and MiFi wireless devices for families. But we were able to experience slight savings with our bus contracts. If you recall back to last spring, all spring sports were canceled in the state of Alaska. So we did experience some savings with some athletic costs and coaching stipends, et cetera. And then substitutes, I think one of my colleagues mentioned that when we were in 100% remote, we really didn't need to have substitutes come into the buildings to substitute teach, so we did experience some savings in that area. But really, overall, not a huge savings when it came to the COVID aspects and some increases in some areas. As far as CARES funding for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, round one of CARES funding, we received $2,295,953 as a school district. And we have used that money for professional development, for PPE supplies. We bought a tremendous amount of Zoom licenses since we were shifting to a lot of remote learning, and that was the platform that people were comfortable with. So we bought Zoom licenses. We really bolstered our efforts to help families that needed connectivity, Wi-Fi connectivity. So we rolled out a large-scale program of MiFis for families that were economically disadvantaged and could not afford Wi-Fi in their own households. In terms of addressing the emotional, social-emotional learning and the mental health needs of our students, we used some of that first round CARES funding to fund elementary counselors. We've never had elementary counselors in this district, and we saw firsthand the impacts of needing that, particularly during the pandemic. So we hired some elementary counselors. We also were having a difficult time retaining and recruiting school nurses, which for me as superintendent, that was a non-starter. In the middle of a global pandemic, we needed to do all we could to make sure that we had an adequate cadre of school nurses. So we actually increased our nurses' pay by $5 an hour in order to retain those that we had and to recruit others. And that may sound like a lot, but we're still far behind what these nurses can make at a private doctor's office or at a hospital. Substitutes, we've seen an increased need this year for the use of substitutes, and we've also increased the pay for substitutes, and if you use CARES money to help with some of that, to help recruit subs. We've purchased electrostatic sprayers, lots of disinfectant tabs. We've done upgrades to most of our schools' HVAC systems. We have something now called bipolar ionization, which helps create a safer internal environment in our schools. I know it sounds fancy, but supposedly it works in killing the coronavirus after a half hour of utilization in the system. Our nurses have bought lots of nursing supplies and thermometers to help with monitoring temperature of students, touchless barcode scanners and lanyards to have touch points or touchless points. School nutrition services spent some COVID money on hygienic containers, brown bags, and cellophane wraps. Digital marketing for our homeschool program. Our homeschool program is not a statewide program, so when families are considering homeschool, it's a pretty competitive environment. So, in order to compete with Galena, IDEA, and other homeschool programs, we've done a good job of telling the good story of our own homeschool program. And then additional costs have been wireless access points in all of our schools. We've had to bolster those. And then more computers and laptops for students that are learning in a remote environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent O'Brien. Any questions from the committee? All right. So some of these answers are kind of wide-ranging, and I know they're hitting on a lot of topics that were covered in all of my questions. I've heard some response from some of the superintendents on it, but if you've seen a reduction in enrollment, do you expect students to come back next year? And we'll start with Anchorage School District. I think you said you were down about 5,000 students. Superintendent Bishop.
Thank you. Chair. We are approximately 4,500 down from last year. We do expect 75% of our delta there to come back to Anchorage as we're opening. We are having interest in coming back as well. We are following up in our budget process with a survey of all of our parents and families who have left, our leavers, to see if they are planning on coming back. And we'll have a budget adjustment before the new year. And so our budget is built presently at this time on that 75%, but we're following it up in April with a survey once schools are open.
Thank you. Superintendent Boyd, I believe you said your enrollment was up because of the COVID impact, correct?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, our enrollment went up about 2,400 students. We for next year, projected about a 35% decline. We're expecting maybe even more to go back to their respective schools. We are surveying them right now to have a better idea as to what their plans are right now. From what we're seeing, we have about 33% that are still uncertain, and probably about 45% who have answered so far say they will be returning. So we're preparing to do everything we can to, you know, provide the services for that increased enrollment, but we're also being very cautious and mindful that many families will return as the schools open.
Thank you. Superintendent Boland with Bering Strait, I believe you might have said y'all were kind of flat for the year, no increase and no decrease.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. We've remained pretty flat. We did have an increase of about 13 students, but most of those, and they may be the ones that some of the ones that Dr. Bishop is looking for, but we did have students return from communities that were not in face-to-face because we were in face-to-face. So we did see a little increase. I don't anticipate whether they'll stay once, you know, going into next year or not. But, you know, again, if those 12 or 13 leave, it basically keeps us all right about the same. So we have not been affected as much in that manner. Thank you.
Thank you. And Superintendent Johnson with Dillingham School District.
Thank you, Chair Holland. For Dillingham specifically, we don't know, and it's not for a lack of communication. As I alluded to at the beginning, living in a region that was severely impacted by the Spanish flu, that trauma is still historically relevant in our families and generationally real. Our student body feels this, our community feels that. So I don't think until there's clarity with COVID that we're going to know if we're going to get these families and children back. We maintain communication with them. We have great relationships with them, but we also want to honor how they feel for how these things have impacted their lands and their families historically.
Thank you. And Superintendent O'Brien with Kenai Peninsula Borough School District.
Thank you, Chairman Holland. Yeah, this past year we certainly experienced, it was an interesting phenomenon. Our homeschool program, which is called Connections, our Connections homeschool program normally has an enrollment of 750 students. We experienced a dramatic increase in the number of Kenai students who enrolled in that program. I think at its peak this year, before we went back to 100% in-person learning, it was up to almost 1,800. So you can see from a normal enrollment of 700 to an enrollment of almost 1,800, that's a significant increase. And then unfortunately, we also had some of our families select some of those statewide homeschool programs, which was a double hit for us in terms of revenue, because, you know, when we have a student in homeschool, we at least get 90% of the revenue for those students that they remain in our homeschool program in the district. But when they go out of state, then those funds stream to to other districts where the families don't live. For next year, we took a very conservative approach. And I have to tell you that trying to project enrollment for fiscal year 22 was the most difficult. I've been doing this for a very long time, and this was our most difficult year to try to predict what our enrollment is going to be for next year. So we took a very conservative approach with that here on the Kenai. We did not want to guess wrong and overextend the number of contracts that we were going to be offering teachers. So we are still considering that a lot of families will be in our homeschool program. But what we're going to do in April is we're going to do a second recast of our enrollment. We're going to ask families to commit and enroll early in April for the fall, so that we know exactly what we're looking for. And then we'll make adjustments to our staffing formulas in the spring once we have a better sense. And we're hoping that with the vaccines and with the state of Alaska doing much better with getting this COVID virus under control, that families are going to be more comfortable with bringing their students back in the fall for in-person learning. Thank you.
Thank you so much. A question from Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you. I was actually going to try to lump it in since you're going through all of them, but the question I have is, and right now I see that Anchorage and Dillingham is above 10% fund balance, but I think when CARES, when other programs are distributed, probably many, if not most, districts will be above the 10%. How critical is it that we act as a legislature to allow a fund balance to be above 10% for the next couple of years while you deal with some, I don't want to use the term excess funding, but temporary excess funding that's going to put you above that level?
We'll start with Superintendent O'Brien with Kenai.
Yeah, Kenai was not one of the, I think there were 27 school districts this past year that carried over 10%. We were not one of those districts because, quite frankly, we really didn't experience a significant amount of savings. And then what happened to us as well, due to the hit economically here on the Kenai to local businesses and the tourist season, our borough government took a significant hit in revenues and actually reduced our local contributions by $2.7 million. So we actually experienced a reduction from the Kenai Peninsula Borough for education funding than what we had budgeted. So, you know, the good news is that we didn't have to carry over more than 10%. The bad news is that that doesn't mean we didn't have our own struggles. I think authorizing the emergency and allowing those districts that need to carry it over is going to be a very important funding mechanism for those districts that that take that. And I'll leave it up to my colleagues who are in that position to speak to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Superintendent Johnson with Dillingham.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, we did have a bit of a carryover. I think that for us, that relates to $75,000. So certainly not in an astronomical amount, but it's invaluable. It's prudent that we do have legislation passed that allows this. With so many unknowns and the needs of our students coming back, it's impossible for us to prudently spend money now for the unknown. If we have that levity in the next year to two to expend that funding, we can really do diagnostic testing, find out what our individual students needs and target those needs. And I would use the term to be surgical with our spending. In a time when we have to be more judicious than ever, I think it's very prudent. And kind of to allude to something that Mr. O'Brien had mentioned, with the change in the school bond debt reimbursement, our anticipated increases in local contributions have not come. We expect to continue to be flatlined at that local contribution as a result of that. So that's a very significant change for our funding also.
Thank you. Superintendent Boland with Bering Strait.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair, Senator. We are, I think it would be helpful for especially small districts, probably all districts, to have some type of flexibility in some form of waiver because of the uncertainty, especially in rural Alaska, of you know what's going to come next. And although we don't have an issue right now based on last year, you know, it could become an issue as we do get other revenue streams for trying to offset some of the cost. And we want to use those before we tend to use, you know, our district money. So so having that flexibility, I think, would be vital to school districts to to have it available at a future date. Thank you.
And Superintendent Boyd with UConn Koyukuk.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator McKeachy. I just want to back up to that last question about enrollment and projections in these uncertain times. The Department of Ed has a nice process in place where we send in our projections. And we, as superintendents, we meet on a regular basis every week, every other week, and we talk about projections because we knew that this would be a question that would be asked of us. And we looked at it, and it's so difficult right now to really hone in on what it's going to look like with so many unknowns. But we have given it our best shot as far as where we think we're going to be and have filed that with the Department of Ed. There are about 7 districts that are looking for some type of floor through the Hold Harmless that regardless of where we are with enrollment decreases and extra funding, that they are suffering. And they are going to be looking for some support from the department and possibly from you. As far as the 10% carryover, I believe that I can speak for many of the superintendents as the ASA president that passing that declaration is critical so that we can be good stewards of the funding and have time, ample time for planning. I believe this will probably be the first year, at least in my district, that we will exceed the 10%. Typically, we do not. But I know there are, in our conversations with other superintendents, many would appreciate that to extend that 10% carryover. Thank you.
Thank you. And Superintendent Bishop with the Anchorage School District.
Thank you for the opportunity to answer this question. Through the chair, I just want to share that Anchorage, again, as just the economy of scale, these look like big numbers, but I want to explain a little bit about our carryover. It is a little over 10%, as you see in the documents, which equates to about $64 million. One of the things as a local, large school district that participates under our city, there's a city ordinance that doesn't allow us to spend. And so 6% of our reserves needs to be kept in savings for our AAA bond rating. And so that's by city ordinance, so it's unspendable. And so that's about $26 million of that $64 million. Presently, there's $30 million that is unassigned, which is about 5%, a little bit about 5%. So essentially, Anchorage has that much money for our savings account emergency. $8 million of the $64 was actually built into our budget this year to create a balanced budget in FY21. And so just wanted to share that a little bit. Senator Holland probably understands that, and Senator Begich, those that are local, really understand the impact of the city versus the district policy and how they work in conjunction to bring our taxpayers the best deal out there for our bonding. Another thing I did want to say is that it is absolutely essential, really, I would say, not just to have the fund balance, but to, I want to put a plug in for the emergency order. And one of the things that we are doing as a school district for our community, just last night we completed 11,009 vaccines in shots and arms of people 65 and older in the Anchorage municipality, actually all over, because I've had some Willow people, Fairbanks people come down to get their shots here. Commissioner Crum, as well as our local hospitals have donated those. We are willing to do this. Anchorage, again, just understanding the ability for us to scale. That emergency order has given us the ability to give back to our community and move forward in Anchorage as well as in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Bishop. I believe a question from Senator Hughes.
Right. I know we're running up against the end, but I believe all of you at one point alluded to some learning loss by some of your students where they struggled with the remote learning, whether it was individuals or students groups. So what I'm wondering is, do you believe that you're going to be able to catch those students up? And if so, how long will it take and what is your plan to do so? Some of you mentioned summer school, but is this going to be a several year process, and are you thinking ahead as to how you might go about catching those students up?
And we'll start with Superintendent Bishop.
Thank you, through the chair, to Senator Hughes. I appreciate that the focus on academics and student learning and achievement. Absolutely, there is a gap. And to give a little bit anecdotally, I have been in schools. I'm actually a certificated teacher, so I'm on the sub list at some of our schools, and I go around and visit just so I know how to do the day. And just in speaking with teachers as well as our data in curriculum-based measures and backing that up, just taking the reading area of pre-K through 2, we are significantly behind. The teachers are just sharing that the engagement and being online, just the amount of vocabulary that occurs in a classroom and learning from each other in a classroom is really having students fallen significantly in the early fundamentals. This is going to be generational when it's an impact in pre-K through 2. And understanding that Alaska was already suffering in this area. All of us have been unsatisfied with our reading achievement and our children and their ability. Children learn to read to learn, and that's why I share that it's generational. Even going back to normal is not good enough for Alaska and its young readers, and I highly support the reading bill, and I highly support getting kids in as soon as possible. Anchorage School District used $1.2 million in its reserves of that $8 million that I shared just to boost up pre-K learning, knowing what happened last spring. Just the learning loss last spring, we boosted that up, and we plan on really building the capacity for learners. The earlier that we can get learners in, evidence has demonstrated that it pays off in the end. And so I can't say enough. Thank you for the question. It is there. Nationally, they predict a 15% decrease in outcomes across the board related to reading. And it doesn't mean that not all kids aren't going to learn to read, but it means that to their peers and previous generations, it will be a 15% impact nationwide. 15 million young people have been out of school not learning to read across this nation. It's a crisis. And we intend to build capacity. Presently, we have after-school reading programs right now, and we're going to continue those through the summer and into many years, as long as it takes. We owe it to these kids, and we owe it to our country. Thank you.
Thank you. Superintendent Boyd, UConn Koyukuk.
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Hughes. I also appreciate this question. This is been a very big challenge for our district. When we first had to close schools back in March, and we monitor our students very, at least quarterly, and then we progress monitor. And when we looked at our assessment results from March into when we finally were able to start back in person in September, we saw pretty dramatic decreases in our rural schools. Our homeschool families, they were very fortunate. They didn't really miss too much. They were already receiving virtual instruction. They didn't miss a beat. There were some families that had additional concerns if they were working and they were trying to adjust to that. But for the most part, what we're seeing were pretty significant drops in learning from the assessments that we had put in place. What we're seeing now, as we monitor them and progress monitor them, we are seeing, very encouraged by what I'm seeing, is that we are seeing them catch up and start to get back to where they were. But there was a pretty significant drop. some of the things that we are doing. We are planning a robust summer school program for our students. We are implementing, we are putting in infrastructure. I think I alluded to this earlier. We're putting in the infrastructure in our villages, something we don't have. When GCI and DRS were donating, generously donating internet and MiFis, it didn't help us because there wasn't any connectivity equipment in place. So we have used some of the funding that we have, and our school board has put aside funding so that if we ever have to close the school, or regardless if we have to close the school, we want to build that equity in learning for our students so that they can have the university courses, they can have Zoom courses, and have access to all those resources that they haven't had. We have one school right now, we're so excited that we will be having that in place for them, especially for summer. Some of the things that we're doing right now to help with the catch up is we have literacy buckets that are going out on a regular basis to all of our families. We have hired teaching reading specialists, math specialists. We have developed a team out of both teachers and administrators to help look at those targeted areas where our students might have challenges. If a student with our, we have a pretty systematic reading program in place, and which will only be strengthened if we're able to pass that reading bill that's out there right now. If our students go below a certain norm that we have written in the written plan, their parents are notified in writing. They have a conference. Well, right now we don't have the in-person, and we have a plan that is developed for every one of our students. With that said, then we turn around and provide those. We have them tiered, all of our students, tier 1, 2, 3, to provide extra learning throughout the day for them, focused on reading and math and writing. If we do have to close our schools due to the pandemic, we try to shorten that time. We know that at home it's not always feasible to have the direct learning from parents because they're working and there's other siblings in place. We also have been looking at our youngest, our Head Start, our three-year-olds, and trying to partner with Head Start to have them take part in our professional development. We've offered free rent in our school to the organization so that we can encourage the little kids to get ready for big school. And that has helped. Right now, though, with Head Start, they are still at home. And so we are reaching out to them, have already reached out to see what we can do as a district to get them some of the resources that they may need for our students and our parents as teachers programs to give them that foundation. So there's a lot going on. We're planning even more. We try to have a systematic approach across the district due to sometimes higher turnover. This year, we're fortunate. It looks like we're going to have between a 90 and 95% retention this year, which is very unusual. I don't know if it's due to the pandemic. I'll have conversations later with my colleagues to talk about that. But we are concerned about it. That is something that's been on the top of our table as a priority through our board and through our administrators and teachers. And some of our teachers and administrators are tutoring one-on-one after school. We're fortunate that we have strong teachers in our program that are willing to use their own time to help the success of our students.
Thank you, Superintendent Boyd. Superintendent Boland, Bering School District.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, we also are trying to look currently at our MAP data and the teaching, the gold checkpoints, kind of, so to speak, in those. We have struggled getting additional data just because if students aren't coming into the school as much and intermittent closings, it makes it a little bit more difficult. However, we have provided on a Google Shared Drive for all teachers. I had the district office curriculum team go through and create lessons to specific standards and tried to hit the most important standards in a learning in a grade. And so all of our teachers can access that and use that for learning, especially for the distance learning. They're easily printable, come with directions for parents, and it allows for that information to get out. We also purchased a program which has been very helpful for us, Fast Forward, and it helps to slow down speaking and allows for students to that have difficulty in hearing and speech to be better engaged in and learn sounds and phonetics and move forward in that way. So so we've been trying to use that, as well as we've been using funds from the Department of Ed CLSD grant for K-5 to improve some get some Edgenuity classes. Again, these are supplemental to the instruction going on in the classroom, but it also ties directly to our MAP scores for 6th through 12th grade, so that's helpful for trying to catch students up that may be showing deficits in their testing. And then we do have after-school tutoring for all of our low-risk students, or real technically low-risk designations, to come in and do tutoring in the afternoons. We do plan to have a summer school. Our challenge with summer school, not just this year but any year, is keeping teachers in our rural communities. Once their contract ends, you know, they tend to travel back home, see family, down to the lower 48. So, you know, it limits the numbers that we can address in order to keep teachers here during the summer for a certain amount of time to provide instruction. And then, of course, we've taken advantage. ASDN has done a great job of providing some online learning, professional development. We've had a great turnout from our teachers for that. And then we've also provided stipends to curriculum instruction facilitators here in the district office that provide Saturday optional professional development. We give them a stipend if they attend, but it is kind of optional for them as well to come in when they can. So we're trying to address those gaps in multiple ways and fight through that. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to apologize. We're going to go beyond our allotted time for just a little bit, but I'd like to hear the last two superintendents. And I had a great suggestion from Senator Begich for any schools and superintendents who may be listening in who have similar thoughts on the subjects we've been discussing today, to feel free to provide those thoughts in writing to the committee. These are the kinds of questions and answers and feedback we'd like to get from the various districts. But on to Superintendent Johnson, Dillingham School District.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I wish that I could actually be there with you in person to answer this specific question. I think you'd certainly see my passion and fire for exactly what you asked. So directly, will we accomplish this, and will we catch kids up? Absolutely. I think that's why every one of us is here today to speak with you. That's why the superintendents in the state have chosen these jobs. We're blessed to have the opportunity to change kids' lives, and right now is the time to do that. And so, but how do we do it? Right now, what we're doing here is we have an extensive network of after-school tutors who can correlate one-on-one with our students. We have multiple risk assessments we run daily so that our counselors, our administrators, and our teachers can reach out to students who are falling slightly off the pace. We use a 70% grading scale for us to trigger one of that. So any student that's falling below a C, we make immediate contact with that student and that parent. We don't wait weeks or months. It's that day that it happens. So that close connection in a small community is something we're able to do. And something really neat that I think is, again, a blessing in a small community is we did find a group of our seniors who were struggling to get their English credits. And in such an important year for graduation for them, we've actually found a teacher willing to teach an additional class after school so that that cohort of kids will graduate on time. And I think that's some of the beautiful things that are happening throughout the state. And in the future, as Dr. Bishop mentioned, this is a several-year process. Our development team believes it's going to be a 3 to 5 year process here in Dillingham to ensure that our kids are on track. And the way we're going to do that is really focus on a strong K-2 literacy program. And inside of that program, I also want to stress that a big portion of our kids' development at that age is socialization, and that can't be replicated online or in a virtual format. So we really want to bring those kids over this summer if we can, after school if we can, and really just get some of that play-based learning and get kids together. They learn so much through that that we're missing right now. Also, what you would see then is a robust RTI program. And what you hear often is response intervention with regard to academic supports. So we're going to build a really strong district-wide program. We've already hired multiple interventionists that are working today that will be with us next year to catch all those kids that are falling slightly off the pace. And we're also going to implement the same strategic approach to supporting students with social-emotional needs. We've been very blessed to partner with an organization to have a mental and behavioral counselor on staff. We have counselors in both buildings that are partially funded through a grant. So we have a lot of tools and supports in place that we think can help elevate these kids who are facing these difficult situations right now.
Thank you, Superintendent Johnson. And Superintendent O'Brien, Kenai Peninsula Borough School District.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I mean, that is the question of the day right there. That is the question of the day. I hope that we can catch students up in 3 years. I think that's an ambitious goal. I think Dr. Bishop was spot on when she alluded to this is a generational issue that we will be facing. And we've learned a lot from studies done from Hurricane Katrina and the impact that students in New Orleans and Louisiana faced in those school districts when those students were out of school, in some cases for over a year due to the impact of Hurricane Katrina. What we've experienced here with this global pandemic is a Hurricane Katrina on a national and a global scale. What we're planning on doing, a lot of the strategies that you have heard my fellow colleagues state here, the Kenai will be doing a lot of those as well. Furthermore, please know that we meet regularly, sometimes multiple times a week, with our colleagues throughout the state. We have regular meetings, including like-size meetings, where I meet regularly with Dr. Bishop and all the other Big Five superintendents, and we share ideas and collaborate. We are working hard on this question as a united group of superintendents. How can we address the generational impacts that this will have on our students? What we're planning on doing in the Kenai is making sure that we leverage our CARES Act funding. We're expecting about $9 million here on the Kenai over the next year, and we are pleased that we're able to use that over 2 years. Our plan is to make sure that we are spending the majority of that addressing just this question on how we're going to catch students up, how we're going to provide them with opportunities that have been lost during this global pandemic. So we're planning on hiring additional interventionists on top of the ones we have to address literacy and math skills. Those are the two building blocks that we really need to immediately address. I applaud Superintendent Johnson's focus on the social emotional learning. We can't forget that it's not only instructional impacts that have occurred due to this global pandemic. We have a lot of families that are in crisis right now as a result of this pandemic. And we have students that are in our schools coming from those families that are experiencing that trauma as well. So we're also going to be making sure that we can continue to fund our elementary level counselors and perhaps provide some additional mental health support for our students in the middle and high school age range. We'll be offering extensive summer school programming and also after school programming. And then for our district, transportation is critical for families who can't get their students to these programs. So we're going to make sure that we provide them with an opportunity to get there, get back home, and then also be fed and meet their basic physiological needs while they're learning. So thank you. That's an excellent question.
Well, thank you to the five superintendents for your great candid answers and detailed answers. I appreciate it. I think we've learned a lot today. We will be hearing from five additional superintendents on Friday, February 12th. Our next meeting will be on Friday, February 12th at 9 a.m. And is there any other business before the committee? I appreciate your indulgence in running a little bit over time today. Thanks again to those superintendents who called in today. Hearing no other business, this meeting is adjourned at 10:38.